This is Eric Christensen from STL Up Late, and you're listening to Rock Paper Podcast.
I'm a podcaster.
What on earth is that?
Podcast is kind of like it's like a radio show that's not on the radio. It's on the internet. Does that make sense?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's also like my mom. It makes it sound more confusing, doesn't it? It sounds like this.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock, 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 rock Paper Podcast, y'all.
Welcome to Rock Paper Podcast, episode 65. My name is Crispy Meter.
I'm Shane Presley.
We are hanging out here with Eric Christensen of STL Up Late. You are kind of a big dog on that show, host and director, right?
Big dog. I remember those shirts. Remember
I was saying, because you're dressed in a dog. You're dressed in a, as a dog outfit.
Yeah, yeah. I play the dog in the show. Yeah. I host it, which means that I guess I have just the job of not having fun while everybody else is
right.
fun.
Is it like the most stressful job of like the thing of making sure everything keeps going forward? And
no, it's not too bad. I feel like sometimes I'm not having the most fun out of the cast, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, I love meeting all those new people and hosting.
It's
gonna
be a blast. Yeah. So STL Play is basically a St. Louis, basically like a live talk show, as if it would be like a Jimmy Kimmel or something like that. You know, you guys have musical guests, sketches, and things along those lines. A lot of awesome comedians and stuff. We had Bobby J. Cox on the show. It seems like a long time ago.
Yeah.
Early on. But so how did that whole thing kind of, how'd the show get kind of started?
Well, it's funny. We were talking about how I was a stay-at-home dad before we started recording. I was at home, and I would watch a lot of Conan and Jimmy Kimmel while I was with my 8-month-year-old baby, and during the day, like I didn't watch it when it was live, I would watch it on Hulu, and I was like, man, I love comedy, and I love St. Louis, how can I marry those two things together? And I was like, the talk show is the perfect thing to like promote St. Louis, but also have fun and do what I love to do. So I decided to kind of take that idea of the talk show and kind of merge it with sketch comedy, which is, I also loved. And that kind of became this thing called STL Up Late, which is kind of a hybrid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you spent, now you're from, not from St. Louis necessarily, right?
You
moved here. And you spent some time in Chicago too.
Yeah,
doing Second City and stuff.
I was in Chicago for about 6 years doing shows at, IO Chicago, Second City, Comedy Sports. I did shows all around there, and in fact, I was commuting back and forth between St. Louis and Chicago for a long time.
Oh, wow.
Every week I would get on the train and go to Chicago and then back again. Then I moved down here full-time, jobs and babies and whatnot.
Right,
I love the city, and I fell in love with the culture down here. And
Well, that's kind of why we've done this, too, is just because there's such a, I guess St. Louis isn't really looked at as like a, you know, compared to a Chicago or New York or L.A., you know, but there's such great talent, as comedians or musicians or whatever, and like the culture just so cool, and we were talking about it last week with the record store day, just you go down there and just there's so many different types of people down there, and you would think it's like almost people watching, but at the same time, nobody judges anybody down there, it's just a good, vibe, and I think that's what's really cool about St. Louis, and it's probably nice, like you said, to kind of be able to showcase that element of St. Louis. And
I think, and when I moved here, I was doing comedy, and I did a lot of shows at the Improv Shop. And one small thing I noticed a little bit was people who have been here for a long time, maybe grew up here. There was a certain pocket of people that just kind of felt like, yeah, but it's St. Louis. You know, like, yeah, but I'm in St. Louis. And it's like, no, like, I lived in Chicago. I lived in Austin for a long time. This is a cool city.
Yeah.
Like, know that. Don't like shortchange your city. This is a cool place to live.
Yeah, there's a lot like, you know, having pride in St. Louis, and I'm sure lately with, you know, the stuff that's happened a few months before, which isn't necessarily St. Louis itself, but has gotten a bad rap, but it's like that's such an isolated little bit that the bigger picture is such a great place. I think Midwest people, but especially St. Louis, have a really good rep of like just taking care of your others and like being really kind hearted people and I don't know. Yeah, I've always had a really high, like, just proudness of being like, yeah, I'm from St. Louis.
And good.
Being able to kind of showcase it and stuff. But so I guess, how do you guys go about setting up a show? Because it's got to be, you guys do it live, is that?
We do, yeah.
So that's got to be a whole another added level of like.
It is.
I don't know, pressure, but like also, yeah, being, make sure you have your stuff together. So how do you guys kind of go about setting up, you know, from day one, you know, on a show to actually producing it and doing it? How's that
process work? We generally, like, when we're off season, we'll do a lot of, like, writing and brainstorming and just kind of thinking about the show. And then when we're in season, we have a writer's meeting on Sundays, and we will bring scripts to the table and bring pitches for different ideas, different sketches. So we'll pitch those ideas, we'll read new scripts, we'll go through them, do notes, do rewrites, and we'll bring them back the next week, next Sunday. And then after that, we will rehearse. We've been rehearsing right here in my living room most recently. And we'll rehearse and then go live with the show on Saturday, and we get into the space. Gosh, our production crew, which those guys are amazing. Josh McNew, who's the other producer on the show. Those guys get in there at noon. They start sound checking the band. They start setting up all the props and set. And then the cast and crew, we get there about 4 for the monologue. 5 o'clock, everybody kind of rolls in. We start rehearsing all the sketches and stuff.
Gotcha. Was it nice. Was it at all an adjustment for you to kind of, because I think when you see you know, say you watch like a Fallon, or you know, you could say like, oh, he's just reading off a teleprompter, I can do that. But when you actually get up and do it, it's a lot harder than what it it actually is. So was there any adjustment for you, or have you always kind of had a
I did improv for a long time, which has no script, and to go from that to like doing like set up punchlines, like not any stand ups don't even do that.
Yeah.
It was so different. And the first show that we did, episode 1, season 1, I remember my heart was just racing, and we had like a packed house, and I said butterflies, and I was like, man, I haven't felt nervous for a comedy show in a long time, because I haven't done anything like this before ever. And it felt good. Like, I was like, this is cool that I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm scared. And let's see what happens.
Yeah. Right out there.
So what, now you guys are into season 4?
Yeah. Yeah. We just started season 4. We're 2 episodes deep so far.
And how many, how many episodes is that
total? We count a season as 8 episodes. Originally, the first 2 seasons, we did just 8 shows in a row, back to back. And then we decided we needed more time to write. It just was too much. And then so we started to do an every other week format.
Nice.
Yeah. So when you kind of got the crew together, because obviously it's a huge process, you know, and you think it's important at how much, like, I went to school for TV production. I didn't finish, so I couldn't tell
you. Where'd
you go? Northwest Missouri State.
Northwest Missouri. Yeah. I went to Southern Illinois Carbondale for TV production.
There you go. See, we had our son, so I haven't finished yet. I'm about a year away. Oh, nice. But yeah, the stuff that goes into it. So I think the importance of finding a crew that knows what they're doing and not just like, hey, I can turn a video camera on and totally. Sound check. So how'd you go about getting the crew together on that aspect? Or
I approached Josh, who I knew. He had seen me do a comedy show at the Improv Shop and was like, hey, I really want to shoot some videos. Like, do you have any ideas? Yeah. And I was like, I do. I've got some scripts.
Funny thing you asked.
Yeah, so we got together and we shot a couple of funny videos, which I think you can still find online. One of them was called Crotch Elevator. And one of them was about the Rams Stadium, early on the Rams Stadium, like when it first dropped that they were looking at a new one. And we shot those. They're pretty successful. And then down the line, I came up with this idea for the show. And I was like, hey, do you want to help me out with this? You manage the production side. And then he kind of went out and found the rest of the crew that he needed to make the show.
I gotcha. Yeah. And you guys are looking to try and kind of get picked up by a network. Is that correct? Or do you
ideally?
So how is, I guess, is there, and I'm not sure how far into it, but so if you say we're picked up on, you know, by a network or something along those lines, do you think that would scale down kind of what you guys have compared to being able to do it online, where you could probably be uncensored and do things? Or do you think you guys have kind of adapted for that possibility?
We have, I think, adapted. I mean, the show will change for sure. Yeah. Just being on TV, even if it's online versus broadcast. Mm-hmm. The show, when people are watching it, if we're putting it from start of the show to end of the show, it's going to be much different watching it on TV versus... Sure. A live broadcast or a live show. So that will change, but in terms of like the content, nothing's official yet, but we have kind of a soft deal in place with a network, and they are awesome. Going to let us keep the online content to ourselves, which is awesome. So we'll still be able to do everything we want online.
Yeah. Now, something that's really interesting, like, I don't know how much, you said you kind of watch like Conan and stuff, like, do you watch Jimmy Fallon? I mean, the way that he's adapted basically our generation of, like, social media and things into the show is incredible that I feel like, you know, I don't watch Letterman too much. I think Kimmel's really big with doing, like, viral videos and things, but, like, it's really interesting how you almost have to have that aspect of a show of, like, being a presence online compared to just saying, here's my show, enjoy. You know, you have to take in those things because it's such a big, like, thing. And so you guys probably have an advantage in that you start online.
I definitely think having that online presence. And the one thing that I think is funny about the late night talk show format, just even going back to the early days, is it's really built for the internet.
Yeah.
Like, even when the internet didn't exist, it's segments.
Yeah.
Like, it's, like, cut up little segments that go perfectly on YouTube or Facebook or whatever. So it's kind of nice.
Yeah, I mean, that's I feel like that's, you know, like you're talking about Fallon, like, those clips, that, you know, he'll put them up, like, the next, or that night even, or whatever, they're already, and people will start sharing around their favorite lip sync battle or whatever, you know, the bit of the night, and it's, like, it's crazy how, you know, like, you, people watching, you know, on the show, and then they go on YouTube, and there's, you know, a couple million hits on there. Yeah. You know, it's like, it's wild that how many people are just sharing that, you know, clip or whatever, those segments and stuff. So.
Yeah, he does everything perfect in terms of, like, the shareability of all of his content.
Sure.
He just seems to get, like, this, again, like, I don't say generation, but, like, this, you know, because he came from Jay Leno, and, you know, he had his older probably audience, and now he's really hitting the younger demographic, and I think that's what's going to keep him. Obviously, he probably had to kind of make his own name. You know, not that he wasn't doing a bad job on, you know, he had his own late show before, but
I think with Hulu, like you said, and DVRs and everything, I think he's bringing a whole new generation of people watching the Tonight Show. I wasn't big into Leno at all, and I didn't watch. I watched a lot of Conan.
Late night. Totally. Same here.
But not. Excuse me. I big Conan fan also. Like you see, we're talking with him. And
his momentum kind of has slowed a little bit, and I don't know if it's just from being on TBS.
Think so. Josh is also a big fan of him. We talked about he's got to have less resources. I think he's probably a little bit bitter still.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it definitely seems like...
Like, I loved his interview style. Like, it was funny, but it just seems like, you know, for a while, it was Team Coco bring him back, and everybody's all pumped for it, and then he's back, and it's kind of but it may be that Fallon, because the Fallon came on not long after, and he just kills it. Like, it seems like he doesn't have a bad
show. But I think there's, well, like any of us, I mean, but, you know, Conan's been doing it a long time, and I think he's just kind of maybe a little burned out, you know, like...
Could be.
Kind of, you know, I think he's been... I listened to him on... Howard Stern a little bit ago. He had they did talk for like an hour, and it was really a neat conversation. And but he was just got done shooting that remote in Cuba.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, but he wants to start doing a lot more of that. And I think that, I mean, one, I love any of the remotes that he's done.
Oh, like, he's so good just with people.
Yeah. And but it's like, it's you know, it's just him improvising, you know, and like it just kind of riffing with people, and it's like some of the funniest stuff compared to when he's got to actually like interview thing and stuff like that. Like it's but I think he wants to start doing more of that, and I think that's, you know, would help keep it more fresh for him, I think. Totally. Too. And but yeah, I got to see Conan live once in Chicago.
I was up there when he rolled through the Chicago Theater, right?
And that was I mean, like I said, I'm a big fan. He was coming close enough. I'm like, man, I'll run to Chicago. I don't know. That's not that far. So, I think Jack McBrayer was on that night and stuff. I don't know. I remember, like, I think that was the night they wheeled out the giant bobblehead that he had made up. there was some good. I remember they showed a clip, too, like he did, like, some kind of Irish dancing class thing, and like so it was any of that stuff. Just like
you know, was his remote.
Yeah, like, yeah. So it was any of that stuff. I was just like, you know, that's where he shines the best, I think.
And I saw. I would assume you may have been part of this, Bobby. So you, a bunch of the crew went up to LA to pitch the show. Was that
It was. Pitch the show.
Not pitch the show, but like
we just was last year we went to New York, and this year we went to LA, and it's just kind of something that we like to kind of do for the writers.
Okay.
And everybody, we all want to take them to tapings of shows to kind of show them what's going on, how it looks behind the scenes. And this year was cool because we had this goal of getting on a local network that we could go there and kind of just really analyze the shows that we went to at midnight. And
I gotcha.
Kimmel and some of the other shows. So it was just more of a,
Fun
field trip.
Yeah.
Nice. For all of
that's
us.
Awesome. So what was at midnight, like that process? So I'm just, because, you know, seeing on TV, totally different. You know,
yeah.
Was,
oh,
so
yeah.
How was that kind of, what'd you learn
it's,
from that?
It was fun. At midnight had a good kind of theme to it. Chris Hardwick seemed a little out of it that night, but, it was a blast. I mean, they got somebody, you know, pumping up the crowd in between the commercial breaks, and we had a good time, and it was funny because we were tweeting at Chris Hardwick right before the show, and kind of halfway through the show, he's like, "Is there a group from St. Louis here?" And we're like, "Yeah," and he's like, "You know, I'm going to St. Louis soon. I'm going to do a show there," and I was like, "Well, you should come to, you know, be on our show."
Yeah.
He was like, "Well, you got to come to my show."
Right.
It was the whole experience of it was, if you've ever done a live taping, it's fun, but also like it's so different just because you're there and you've got a lot of like breaks and you kind of see how the sausage is made.
You're right. Yeah. It's almost kind of seeing behind the curtain in a sense.
Yeah.
You probably, and I mean, I'm sure you enjoy it, but it's almost because there's so much going on, you almost don't have time to totally take it in because there's such, you know, constraints on time in the sense of like having to make sure you hit, you know, spots and things like that. But it's always been really interesting just seeing, because when you see it on TV, it's so just fluid. It's just like, this is how it flows. But you don't see, like, you know, like I said, the guy who pumps up the crowd kind of in between breaks and stuff like that. Stuff you don't see necessarily on TV, it's really interesting.
We did, previous to that, we went to New York and we did Colbert. Josh and I got backstage for Colbert, and then we did SNL.
Oh, wow.
And SNL is a whole new ball game because that's actually live.
Right.
And it's incredible how they pull that off.
I'd love to just see, like, I've seen documentaries on, I'll just say it was like the making of South Park, an episode. I would love to just go and see a documentary of like day one of Saturday Night Live, of like rehearsal all the way up to like a really in-depth.
There is a there's one on Hulu. It's called Saturday Night, and it's, oh gosh, what's the guy's name? He was trapped under a boulder in that movie. James Franco produced it, directed it. It's really terribly done in terms of like cinematography and like directing, but he got so much access that it really is fascinating to see start to finish. Well,
there's like a full length movie or something or docu-series kind of, however they're going to do it. But I remember that there's a new special coming out with SNL, like for the 40th anniversary and all that stuff. I think it's supposed to be in the film festivals right now, and then I guess it's, so there's supposed to be a St. Louis screening coming up in May, I believe, or something like that.
Awesome.
So I
have
to keep an eye on that. Yeah,
I almost find those more interesting sometimes. Like I'm a big wrestling fan, and like there's supposed to be, I guess, an ESPN 60 on like the whole process of like behind the scenes of doing like wrestling shows, and like that's something as you get older you start to kind of like, you know, you watch it, but then like seeing the actual behind the scenes setup of how like they create storylines or things like that, that's just really almost more interesting sometimes than the actual show itself. And just
we're getting old. We want to watch Baseball the Documentary by Ken Burns instead of watching baseball.
Baseball game's on. That's all right. I'm gonna go read this book by Jack Buck about
any PBS specials.
I don't know what it is. Like I find myself really like, man, documentary section on Netflix, I'm a huge whore for. I'll hit that all the time compared to like going and watching like do you go a lot of movies or anything? Like The Avengers is coming out. I'm just like,
I love documentaries. There was like a crossroads in my life where I went to school for television production, much like you, and I met and became quick friends with Morgan Spurlock because my friend married his cousin, and we met and at a wedding and hung out, and he was like, come to New York, make documentaries with her, like, you know, like, if you ever want to come to New York, you know, let me know. And so, like, a year later, I graduated, and I had his number in my wallet, and I was like, I should just call him. But I was like, I don't want to go to New York. It's too far.
Yeah.
And so I did Chicago instead to pursue comedy, and then that's... Yeah. I'm here.
Here, in the loop.
Instead of doing documentaries.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the up late, like, that whole format just seems... Not to take anything from documentaries, but like just seems like a blast because it's almost... I used to watch Attack of the Show on G4, and it just seems like there's so much... Like, there are, and I don't know how it is on there, but like levels of like maybe some improv spots where he may can, you know, just... Or those moments where you may crack up a little bit and have those you know, and those are the best times sometimes when it's not just like straight off the teleprompter. You can have like some little improv spots that are probably just a blast when they come up.
And we would do a segment every week with, or every show, with the audience, and we'll bring them up on stage, and sometimes we'll do a game show, sometimes we'll be like an improvised little scene that we'll do with the cast members with the audience, and that's always like, you know, who knows what's gonna happen. We had one segment, it was, oh my gosh, we love to tell the story. So we created this fake game show where we had the audience do this really convoluted game where like they all had to like turn to their neighbor, play rock, paper, scissors, podcast, all back. They would do rock, paper, scissors. Whoever won that would have to do a different game with the winners and losers until we finally had this winner. Oh, and then they had to reach onto their seats at the end, and there was a piece of bread taped to their seat with a number written on it, and whoever had like the highest number won. And this lady came up on stage, and we gave her a fake giant check, and then had everybody throw the bread at her, and she was so mad. And it was like, what are we doing? But it was so fun.
I will say, so like a segment or something like that, is there a concern that like... Is there a point where it's like the crowd may not totally be on board for this, or you're just like, you know, this is hilarious, so we got to go for it?
I mean, that was an instance where like she was not on board, and I'm pretty sure the crowd was confused, but we were having a good time.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking of game show stuff. There was SNL with Chris Farley when they pull him up and he's like on that Japanese game show or whatever. And I started. That's where my brain was thinking again.
Idea where he is.
Yeah. Is that like they cut off like a finger or something at the end? Like the lady's like, and she chops off her finger or something, and they put him in an electric thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. And so I guess when I would assume probably the best, some of the funniest moments doing the show are probably behind the scenes, like in the, you know, when you guys are doing pitches and like, you know, you have all the comedians. Like how do you go about saying this sketch is going to make it, or this bit's going to make the show, compared to, especially if they're all, you know, because you've got a pretty good you know, lineup of writers and things like that.
Totally. Yeah, we've got amazing writers, and generally when they pitch something, I mean, we give them pretty free rein. So if they're really inspired to go write something, you know, they just go write it. If there's something that they pitch, then I'm like, man, that sounds great. Write that, and let's bring it back.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like relaxed enough right now that we don't do shows often enough to where it's like, oh, they're bringing back so much content that we'll never be able to do any, like one person will get a sketch in. So, you know, most of the sketches that we bring back to the table to read get produced. And then I think some of the pitches where it's like, okay, we pitched an idea and some people are like, well, I just tried to write it and it didn't work out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the decision process is pretty relaxed in terms of the pitch, and then when we get to the actual table, maybe it gets a little bit more stringent of like, is this funny or not? And then we do rewrites, and then sometimes we'll just keep rewriting it if it's not working until it's there. And that's happened before. Rafe Williams, one of our writers who's newer on the show, one of our most recent additions, and he's fantastic. And he had a sketch that went through, nine rewrites until it finally made it to stage. But when it got to stage, I mean, it just killed.
Yeah.
Like, it absolutely slayed. And so it was kind of a testament to his writing skills and then also, you know, just keeping at it and getting it tight.
Yeah. Is there anything that's, like, off limits or anything you've come across where, like, you know, this is funny, but we just can't do it? Like, do you guys have that point? And I would think, obviously, when it hits TV, you'll have to...
Yeah.
You know, be a little more conscious of what's going on. But
Right now, I mean, the monologue is always, because we do so much topical stuff, and there's a lot of jokes where, like, this is just going to get the audience on not our side. Yeah. I think we had one about Bruce Jenner that we cut. It, I mean, it was like on the fence.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny, but we're just like, people just aren't ready to do a joke right after the interview. And so there's definitely a lot of stuff in the monologue that will come out just because we're like, this seems like we're being too mean right now.
Yeah.
Even though most of the jokes we make fun of a lot of celebrities and a lot of local people. So
yeah.
I just saw a Conan monologue joke. We've got a bunch of them on my DVR I need to catch up on, but it was just the image on their Facebook page. Yeah, saying how that that Bruce is going to have his own reality show now that about all this and stuff, and that but he's immediately going to be paid 70% less than he was on the show, or something like that.
See, like he's like misdirected to like the women's like wage gap, and then you're good to go.
Yeah, kind of distract the audience. Yeah. Not necessarily you're making fun of him.
Yeah, but tie it back to something else to make fun of. Yeah, that's always a way to do it.
Now, you said you kind of been doing, improv, and I read, are you actually still a teacher at the improv shop?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Yeah. So, improv's a really interesting, aspect where it's, you have to be quick on your feet, so how did you go about teaching it, or, how do you kind of showcase that side?
Yeah, I did improv for a long time. I like to think I still do. Mm-hmm. I just don't do enough shows anymore. But, I mean, it's a whole different side of the coin. I mean, it's definitely a lot of elements in our show that we use from improv, but I mean the rules are just, you just learn it. I don't know. Yeah. You gotta kind of go through the process, take the classes, or just get on the team and play, and then you just start to learn it. And once you kind of learn it, you learn all the rules, you learn how to break the rules, and then eventually you do it for 6 years like I did, and then you're like, oh, I can teach this.
Yeah, right.
kind of what's going on.
Is it something that, really, I don't want to put it in the sense of, anybody can do it, but, are there certain aspects people that you notice kind of have to have to be able to, do improv, or do you think you could pull in really anybody and teach them the core aspects?
I think almost anybody can really learn the core of it. I mean, I think there is a certain mind that goes on to be like really good at it. I don't think that everybody has the skill to be an amazing improviser. I mean, it just, if anybody's out there is like trying to get to be the next TJ who's in Chicago, is known as one of the best improvisers in the world. Like, I just don't think that everybody has it in them. I don't have it in me, And so, getting to that level, but I think at the basic level, everybody does. We did, with another group I used to produce a festival with, and then we do a lot of outreach programs. We went into the Juvenile Detention Center here in St. Louis, and we would teach them improv, for one day. And they would get it. Like, after a while, they would start to get it, and they would have fun with it.
Yeah.
So I think anybody can really pick it up.
Yeah, I think I like it more than just like the stand-up aspect. Like, improv is just funny because it's always something, gonna be something different, but it also gives the performer almost like an open box to be like, and I guess it all kind of it based on how quick your brain can create whatever and on the spot. But there's something fun about the improv idea that just, I would love to go see improv shows over probably a stand-up show, not to put anything against.
I mean, I think both of those. I mean, when improv is great, it's just amazing to watch. Stand up, same way, but man, can they both be the worst?
I'm a big fan of Jonathan Winters. I don't know if you're familiar with his stuff, but he's I remember I don't know if it was like Jack Parr or something, one of those, he got had an appearance. I have his special, and they just like give him a pen, and and he starts like, or it's a pen set, and so there's two of them anyway, but he starts like, just he goes, here, do something, and he goes on a whole like tangent, where just improvising, coming up like on the spot with this little, and like he makes it like a fishing pole, and he's like, and he starts like, making the sound effects and acting it all out, and he comes up with these characters, and it's just like, it was so crazy to like watch him, and before, is done with that one, he's already got the next idea and he's going to the next, bit. And so maybe not, they, they don't all hit as funny, and, but they're all, you know, they're all like, it's just crazy how quick you can think about it and come up with this stuff. And but yeah, he's one of my favorite for improv comedy like that, like to watch is and Robin Williams. I know he was really quick about doing all that stuff too. So
I felt like it was crazy how fast he would like jump from one character to another and just bring stuff. It was crazy. It was always manic like a big energy. Thing. Watching him like whenever he'd be on like a late show or something, like it was an event. It's just like, what is he gonna go to and whatever. It's just it was fun.
But. So you've done some stand up too?
Oh man, I did in college. My claim to fame was I beat Hannibal Buress in a stand-up competition in college. That's like my one comedy shining moment thus far. And that, since college, I hosted a couple of stand-up shows after that in Chicago early on. And then I just devoted all the rest of my time to sketch and improv.
Now, did you always kind of have an interest in comedy, you know, growing up and stuff? Or was it something that once you went to school and started kind of seeing the TV, you know, getting into the production maybe?
I definitely think that comedy, especially when I hit high school, was a huge part of my life. I mean, even, I guess, before that, middle school, I can remember in my room turning on this little, you know, tube TV, this little 13-inch tube TV I had, turning the volume way down low so my parents didn't know I was up and watching SNL. And I remember like just kind of growing up on Will Ferrell. Remember like just watching like Cookie Dough Sport, like that commercial or like the all those just those sketches that Will Ferrell used to do back on SNL. And I fell in love with it. And kind of from there, I you know, started doing more comedy in high school. And I've gotten myself in trouble on STL Blight. And even before that, I used to run the TV station. I'm doing quotes. You can't see that, but I'm doing quotes. In my high school, and there was a kid who got busted for counterfeiting money in our school.
Dang.
And the next day on our TV program, we did a big thing for a fake campaign for him for treasurer. He's running for treasurer, and we got in such big trouble.
I could imagine the school just freaking out. Like, what is going on here?
I text Bobby to see if he had anything to sort of bring up.
And, has he got a story or something?
Well, he told me to ask you about going to Kansas City and doing stand-up out there.
Oh, we did the show out there.
Yeah, he said to you guys... Said you guys bombed like real bad out there. Or something.
Yeah, we didn't do stand up. We took STL up late to Kansas City, and you know we were like, well, this show could go anywhere. We'll just kind of retrofit it for whatever city we're in, and we kind of realized pretty quickly that we made this huge mistake of we booked the show in an improv theater, and I don't think and they didn't promote us at all. The venue did not promote us one bit.
Yeah.
So we. Get to the show, and everybody there was like expecting an improv show, and we were doing this like late night hybrid sketch show, and everybody's just like, "What is going on?" And we did like the game where the audience gets up on stage, and the lady's like, "I thought this was an improv," and the tech was terrible because they wouldn't let us get in there and tech in, and there were like times where the stage was just blank for like 5 minutes, and. Anyway, we learned our lesson. Everybody got drunk right after that and had a great time. But the trip was fun.
So have you, I guess in a situation like that, and I would assume luckily, you know, being in St. Louis, the crowds have been pretty good. Real responsive, you know. Are there any moments when the crowd may not be into it? Do you just kind of carry on with the show and you just have to kind of get through it? And
Show must go on for sure. You know, I don't think there's like, I don't think there's ever a moment where, because the show is so segmented, where, you know, the sketch happens or the monologue happens, and we do those jokes and we get out of it and we go to the next thing. So it's never like a play where it's like an hour and a half of like, this is bad, and it's going to be bad for an hour and a half. It's like, okay, that was bad for about 3 minutes, now we're on to the next thing, and now this thing is good or whatever. So anytime we have something that doesn't hit, it's only lasts for a little bit. Is that a good promotion for the show?
Yeah, oh, right. That's all right. Yeah. So I would imagine, Saul like, it'll yeah. yeah, yeah. just suffer through. God, what were we talking about when he saw Stained at Point Fest? Oh, yeah. And that's when they come out and they're like, bear, what did he say? Bear yeah. with us while we...
Yeah, Aaron Lewis, he's like their headlining Point Fest, and he says, first thing he says to the crowd, we're going to make this as short and painless as possible. And like,
like before Stained came on?
Yeah, like well, yeah. they're all on stage, and that's like the first, that's how he greets the audience, you know, and like, and it's like, what? You know, it's like, look at where, you know, we want to, you know, obviously they have a lot of sad, depressed songs. That's what sure. Aaron wrote a lot of. And actually, speaking of, there's another funny Aaron quote. I saw him do a solo acoustic, or not acoustic, but with his solo stuff at the pageant. And he did some acoustic stuff, like with just him and guitar. And he did a couple of Stained songs in there. But he kind of does like a, he's got like one of his latest CDs, like kind of like a country thing. And he says, so yeah, I fucked up and wrote a country, or wrote a happy song or something like that. So I was like,
whoops.
Yeah. So I thought that was pretty good. Like, but yeah, it's like, how do you, everybody's there to party and you're like, you totally bummed everybody out. Like, we're going to short and painless as possible. It's like,
oh, yeah. Maybe you guys could start the show off. Like, yeah, hey guys, and that gives you a heads up just so
people are like, about all this.
We told you. Yeah. I mean, it's not our fault, really. It's just,
has everybody paid their money good?
Yeah, everybody's taken care of, right? Okay. Yeah. We just want to make sure we got your money. So the place where you guys shoot up late, is it kind of set up for like the TV crew and everything like that, or just stuff that has to be brought in, or is it like an actual studio?
No, the current space.
Yeah.
The current space is basically just for live. I mean, we put cameras in there, we get clips and segments. But it is not conducive at all to cameras, and that's why we really can't do a full broadcast show that would go online or on TV from start to finish in that space.
Mm-hmm.
So we will be moving to a new space here very shortly. Actually, we've only got 6 weeks left in our space, so we've been doing our show there for 2 years, and then we're going to have a new home starting in October.
Oh, wow.
That's cool. The first time I think I've announced that. So.
Oh.
Exclusive deets!
Yeah. He's like, I can't say that, so I'll just bleep out the whole time. Yeah, and so in about 6 weeks, you know, we'll get... What did he say? We can't talk about it. Yeah, so have you guys ever thought about doing, and I'm not sure, you know, what it costs or if it does to kind of put it, but like doing any crowdfunding or anything like to get it, or if you get with a network, you know, obviously they'll help.
Yeah, we definitely will have to supplement what it's going to take to move to the new space and get all the gear that we need to be able to do the show. So we probably will start some sort of campaign. We're kind of like working through all the details of what we would need and, you know, what kind of exactly what it's going to take.
Right.
But yeah, definitely by the end of this season, we'll probably kick off some sort of fundraising campaign to make the broadcast show a reality.
Yeah, it's probably interesting to, yeah, when you sit down and think of like, okay, so how much funding do we actually need? Such a, $6 million, no big deal.
Yeah,
no,
and
just throw it out there.
We, I mean, honestly, we could go to, you know, one of these studios that has everything that we need and rent that studio, probably, you know, a little bit cheaper in the beginning, but we really want to self-produce our show. We don't want the network in the studio kind of telling us what to do, so we kind of made the decision, we're going to get this new space, we're going to do it how we want. The network likes us, they want us, but we don't. We want to have our own home.
Yeah.
And we want to do it our way. So doing it that way is going to be a bit of a challenge in just terms of getting all the stuff we need to do it.
Yeah. What's really cool now, and it's kind of a luxury that we have even, I mean, just whether it's a podcast or a show, mm-hmm. is that there's now outlets that even if something doesn't, you know, come through with a network, as there's services like Visteon and other, mm-hmm. you know, that you can, or not Visteon, what's it called? Patreon, that you can, you know, people can subscribe to the show and actually pay mm-hmm. for each episode. And like, you can actually make a living or make, you know, money off of episodes you put online, yeah. which is incredible, you know, opportunity now that, and I set up, think of anybody can do it now, but it's just like, it's good to be able to have that fallback plan that if say something doesn't happen to the network, you can always go online
right.
and,
totally.
You know, it wouldn't be too big of an adjustment for you guys because you already.
And I mean, like, we want to be on the network and we want to have that audience, but at the same time, the online is kind of where our bread and butter is. So
yeah, it's nice to just have that as a backup thing too. But obviously, if you got picked up by a network, that'd be phenomenal.
Yeah.
Or to have that kind of support.
I mean, I know there's a lot going into it, but it's like you think like Fox, too, or, you know, like, local Philly would be trying to, like, or something, because, like, I mean, they've, all they, like, run infomercials and stuff, like, yeah. They don't really have any, like...
No, I mean, the response we've gotten, we shot a pilot, we did shoot a full hour-length show, for Broadcast Ready, and they, I mean, so far the response has been great, and people want that content, they do want it, but they... need somebody who can deliver it weekly and timely, and they need to make sure that it's, you know, the content's good enough. But I think all the networks are hungry for young blood and having that kind of programming.
Yeah. Sure, and something fresh, you know. Something a little different than the same, you know, format and stuff. It's being that you guys are including more improv and sketch to it, and compared to just a traditional sit-down interviews. And
yeah.
I think it comes back, too, that just people in St. Louis, you know, obviously it's a St. Louis kind of specific show in the sense of the branding and things like that, but, like, people love to latch on to the pride of St. Louis and say, yeah, this is something we want to get behind and support. And I think that's something, just being that pride in the city is can be more to your benefit.
I mean, a big part of the show is just promoting people doing cool stuff here, so...
Yeah, I mean, that's our message, too. Yeah, yeah. We're just trying to help support locals the best we can and build this community up, because that's what it's about.
Right.
Is there any other things, past that you'd want to do? Obviously, you got into TV production. Was it to kind of do a show like this, or when you got into TV production, what was the kind of main goal, just to work?
You know, I don't know. I definitely like to do comedy stuff. Like, I had, like, an old VHS, like, at home, and we would shoot sketches when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I just kind of got into that, started editing stuff, and really loved it. And then, like I said, air quotes again, you know, in charge of my high school TV station.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just, that seemed like that was the thing that I liked to do the most.
Yeah.
And so I went to school for it, and... ended up being more like, well, I'd rather just do the comedy instead of.
But having the knowledge is
Totally. Like,
and that's, I think, kind of with me is when I was going for product. You know, I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do outside of it, you know, in terms of what specific in TV production or whatever. But knowing how to do the camera and editing and things like that, and just the kind of logistics of it was a big benefit. And then, you know, now it's kind of helped with podcasting and stuff, but now with the age that we live in, you can self-produce things, and having that little more knowledge than just like, okay, so I'll push the red button to hit record and you know an idea of shots and things like is really beneficial. But I think having that knowledge of the background is really,
and the technology, man, like the technology is like, I mean, we've got one microphone sitting in front of us, a laptop and headphones, and like back in the day, like you need a full, like, you know,
Mixer studio,
and, and same thing with TV right now. I mean, the only reason that we can even look at producing this show ourselves is because just in the last 2 or 3 years, studio equipment has become affordable to almost the average Joe.
Well, that's, along those lines, I thought it was interesting. There's a band I like, Vintage Trouble, and they shot a music video for one of their songs exclusively with, like, the iPhone 4 or whatever it was at the time. So, but I mean, that's possible.
No, yeah.
You don't.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, our phones have such good quality that, you know, I mean, granted, if you're doing it on a much larger scale, but I mean, you could, it's possible to do that though. And make it,
we should have been recording this whole podcast on
the
phone.
Yeah. The day that you're going to get up and do your monologue is somebody's going to have this up on a little tripod and then an iPad for your teleprompter. Yeah. And
they have those already.
I have an app on my phone for a teleprompter.
Yeah.
I was looking online on how to make like a teleprompter. Cause you can just, with an iPad, there's a little setup and you can do
just
it. And
it's just, glass.
Yeah. It's just, it's phenomenal. Like and maybe that's why stuff's becoming affordable, is because people are realizing that I don't necessarily need your stuff to do this. I can do it. I mean, it's a benefit to have the high-end stuff, but I can shoot it from my iPhone, and if you know what you're doing, sometimes you can't necessarily tell. But did you ever in college have to rent out, like the big video HD cameras?
I was actually in charge of the equipment room, so I was the guy who rented them out. I was the guy who was listening to, what was the thing at the time? Was the Yahoo Radio or whatever. Yeah. Like sitting there by myself eating a Subway sandwich, renting out
this little room, and they can be like, hey, you gotta wrap those microphone cables up better, man.
Come on, man. Yeah, I don't have to wrap these all day. I'm trying to listen to my Yahoo Radio.
That's hilarious. That always, and it was funny because whenever I'd have to rent those, I'd be so stressed out because I'm like, I have this huge thousands of dollars of equipment sitting in my shitty apartment, and I have to find a way to not break it by the time I get to it. And I think one night I was shooting something and like the light bulb and one of the lights went out, and I'm like, oh God. And you have to get back there and try and explain that you didn't break it, and then like it just went out, and then just hope to God they believe you're not like,
whatever. Why is there burrito all over it?
You drew permanent marker on the cover. What are you doing? It came like that. I think the guy who had it before me. Yeah. And then you say, I checked the shit in. No, it didn't.
Yeah.
Give me your money. Right. But yeah, it was funny. Like, it was intimidating, but also real cool. Because I'm just like, I had this fucking huge HD camera then. And like, when I went to college, how are you? When did you go to college?
I'm in 22, 21. I graduated. Oh my gosh. Well, I went when I was 18. I graduated when I was 22. So,
yeah. Gosh. Oh, yeah. So, like, when I went in 2000, started college in 2004, it was funny because, like, we didn't have necessarily maybe like the carry HD cameras. But then when I went back to college in, I guess, 07 or 08, I think it was, seeing the change in technology from 2004 to 2004.
Yeah, we didn't have HD. I remember the Panasonic that could shoot at 24 frames a second had just come out.
Yeah.
But it was still SD.
Yeah, it was just funny seeing the change, and then like the kids who were in college, I think I was like 25 then, and so they're like 18, 19, and she's like, they didn't have this when I went to college, and I felt like, I can't say that, I'm not that old, but I...
Everything was 4:3 aspect ratio.
You see that color? It used to just be black and white, children. They're like, get out of here, why are you here?
Mm-hmm.
Crazy kids.
TVs weighed 400 pounds.
Yeah.
Sound like the old man and Family Guy. Why are we looking for my paper boy?
Just looking for the paper boy. Have you guys ever thought about doing any type of like animation stuff? Do you know anybody that does animation?
A script that is, it's all based in the world of Street Fighter. So I like the 16-bit Street Fighter. I have a friend who does some animation, but it's just tough to like convince him to do it for free.
Yeah, exactly. I can put your name on it,
right?
Promote it. Who is it? So curious.
Oh, he's an editor out where I work. I'm a video producer out in at vat19.com, and he's our editor.
Oh, gotcha.
I'm friends with him.
I know one. I think there's one guy I went to Webster. I'm friends with who I worked at JCPenney with, and Mike Diliberto, who actually designed the logo for us. And yes, it's the same thing. It's like, I can't draw, and would you mind? And he was really cool about it. Like, he threw it together in no time. But yeah, just trying to be like, I know I can't pay you. If I could, I totally would. But we'll totally try and promote or put your name out there. But yeah, trying to get somebody to dedicate the time into something that they
And when it's like a big project,
exactly.
Yeah, I'm not gonna put that on you.
You could just do. We used to. I remember in college when we were in a band, we were like, my buddy Danny would do like the drawing for all the shirts, or not drawing for all the shirts. Like,
what's the name of your band?
Modern Marvel.
I like it.
We weren't. Yeah, we used to practice at this music shop, and the guy like at night he would just leave and be like, all right, just lock up, and like there's all this music equipment around, and he had like a stage. Like, we could have just stolen all sorts of stuff and
back
been done
the truck
with it.
Up,
but, guys. Yeah, he was this kind of old creepy guy. He's like, all right, just lock up when you leave, and we're just like.
Modern Marvel isn't going to steal anything.
Modern Marvel would be a good
group of guys. Pretty good guys.
We were pretty good, and we weren't very good at music, so he probably knew that even if you stole it, you weren't going to do anything with it. But it was just funny that, like, and it was in Maryville, so it was a small town, but he just like, okay, just, you guys just lock up, and, but we always felt really badass because there's big windows right at the front of the store, and, like, you could see the stage, and we'd sit there, like, jamming, just looking awesome, but if anybody could
nobody could hear it.
Yeah, right, they'd be like, you guys maybe should not do music and maybe do something else, but it was one of those college memories that was always fun.
You ever do any of that music?
Band stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I was in a band for a hot minute in high school, and nobody in that band wanted me there. I was like, let's just play cover songs of Oasis. No.
Dude, we're good.
I went to see Kevin Smith Sunday. At the pageant, and he was telling a story about getting Johnny Depp in, I forget the name of the movie now, but anyway, one of his newer movies, and he's like talking to Johnny about, like, oh man, you know, this is so cool working with you. You know, you're like one of the best and all this stuff. But he's like, that's your opinion, you know. And he's like, that's what you think. He's like, that's because Johnny went out to LA to be in a band and stuff. But then the band kind of fizzled out, and then he took an audition, got into Nightmare on Elm Street, and then led to all that. But it was just. So he doesn't, you know, Kevin's talking about how great of an actor he is, but he's like, I just see a failed musician, you know.
Yeah, really? So
as much as he, as successful as he is, his heart's in music.
Feels terrible with his millions of dollars.
Yeah, he's wiping his tears.
Just
with
keeps his, taking know, movies of spite.
this is dollars ruined.
I just didn't know if there was like that... that drive in there where you secretly wanted to be the
musician,
the drummer for or whatever, something.
Yeah, no, I mean, I guess a documentary filmmaker, there's always like a little itch there to go back into that world. Yeah. But
is there any topic or anything you'd
call Morgan?
Or ideally, if you could do one documentary on anything, despite how difficult, whatever, what would that, you know, have you ever thought about what you want?
I always love my favorite like style of documentary. Is just about like the human life and just just seeing somebody's experience. I love Hoop Dreams. I love all those types of movies where it's just about the people in them rather than like an agenda of like no guns or grow
save
green.
The whales.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really what I'm into. I did have one idea that I wanted to do so bad in college, where I was on an intramural basketball team and I got dunked on real bad. Like, I was, like going back, and my friend was, like, guarding this guy, and for some reason, he just switches off on this fast break, and this, like, 6'3" athletic powerhouse of a dude just goes up and just dunks on me.
Like a Vince Carter through the legs of your head.
And, like, the whole gym's like, "Whoa!" Like, just, like, people on, like, the stands just, like, going nuts. And, like, I was just so embarrassed. And I remember, like, I want to do a documentary about, like, my quest to dunk a basketball. So like, to, like, redeem myself.
That's hilarious. They may have something on there. Yeah.
Well, at least it was only an intramural league. You got guys that, the NBA. And then,
getting posters.
Yeah, now that, they got posters.
Yeah, just that's true.
Look, yeah, I mean, that lives on forever.
Have you ever watched that documentary, King of Kongs? About Pac-Man, King Kong.
King Kong.
Donkey Kong.
Donkey Kong.
We'll get there.
Yeah,
sometimes.
Yeah, I love it.
It's such a good documentary, and you feel so bad for the... I can't remember the guy's name. Yeah, and it's funny that one part where he's like about to break the record, and his kid's like, "Come wipe my butt, Dad, I pooped." It's like, "Hold on, about to break the record." And then that other guy, I can't think of what, something Mitchell...
Is that the asshole guy?
Yeah, the black hair, like the original
so
guy.
So over the
He's
top.
He's so just like, yeah, love so that. If you want to be the best, be me, and I'm the best. And it's just like, it's a really great documentary, but it's just funny that like seeing the personalities of like the teacher who's trying to do it, and then the guy who's like big in the 80s and just thinks he's still living off that stuff. But it's a good time. So we're going to do a few, like a rapid...
Ooh.
Question.
He is like a psychiatrist.
It's
type
very,
guy.
Yeah. So, when you were a kid, there was no. So, just this or that type thing.
Quant test.
Yeah. Right. So, what do you see here, and why are you wrong? Just so which one you prefer, just because we got a couple minutes here. Sure. And you can totally give an explanation on why. So, we'll start off with Fallon or Kimmel? Jimmy Fallon or Jimmy Kimmel?
I'll go with Fallon.
Fallon. Okay. Nintendo or Sega?
Sega.
What's your favorite game on Sega? Do you remember?
NBA Jam.
Oh, hell yeah. If I had that guy's voice all day.
The nail in the coffin! From way downtown! Boom shakalaka!
Baseline Lena.
Yeah.
He's on fire!
He's on fire! Jack in the Box tacos or Taco Bell tacos?
Taco Bell.
Taco Bell. DC or Marvel?
Marvel.
Marvel. Are you a comic book reader?
I used to be when I was a kid.
Yeah. Boy Meets World or Girl Meets World?
Boy Meets World.
Thank you.
Who wants his girl?
This interview would have been completely over.
Josh, if Josh is listening, he's going to have a field day with it.
See a Boy Meets or Girl Meets World fan?
He likes it all.
How could he? Shame on him. Boy Meets World. It's on every night at like
he loves
for like 4 hours on like Nick Jr. or something. And then when I'm laying in bed, I'm like, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Topanga.
Topanga. Wayne's World 1 or Wayne's World 2?
2.
2. Yeah, I like that. I know I like the way I said it better. Okay. Carrot Top or Penn and Teller?
Penn and Teller.
Yeah, that was probably a no-brainer. I think I know the answer. Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter?
Mortal Kombat.
Mortal Kombat. I thought you were going to say Street Fighter.
I don't know. It's a tough one.
Have like you played the new Mortal Kombat game?
No.
No. I feel like it's too hard. Yeah, I couldn't do it. I used to, what was it? I remember going into Walmart all the time. I think it was here, but I don't remember where. And you just hear in the background, Street Fighter Alpha. And it was like the big arcade in like the background. Like,
don't they like now just like... Like, the whole thing is just dismembering people. Like, it's just like, that's what, how disgusting.
That's what Mortal Kombat is. Yeah, there's, like, a video of, like, the worst fatalities that will make you cringe. And it's, like, a lady punching the dude through his balls up to his... I don't know what it is.
But taking
like,
his skull out and putting his testicles inside of the skull where the eyes should be.
And I could never do it. I was terrible at Mortal Kombat. Like, if I'd win, I'd be like, finish him. And I'd do, like, the punch and he'd fall down. Like, that's not what I wanted to do. God dang it. Stupid game. But yeah, now it's like, let's make it as graphic and painful as I'm just like... I'm not good at the game anyway.
Did you guys...
I don't even care.
Super Bowl when Conan played Mortal Kombat with Rob Gronkowski and Marshawn Lynch. Oh, yeah,
the stupid gamer.
Yeah,
Clueless Gamer. He played... and they played Mortal Kombat, and that's the same thing, like, like somebody ripped somebody's head off, and Conan's like, what? And he's, like, laying in the fetal position crying and stuff. And, like, it was... but, yeah, that was one of the funniest, like, you know,
that was a good one.
Segments, because like those two were like trash talking the whole time, like, and somebody should have got those guys like a reality show, just the Marshawn and Rob together, because like those guys are characters, man.
Well, that's the thing, you can just do YouTube. That's what's so crazy, is like you could just put it on YouTube and have their own following show. Be good, monetize it, just don't steal stuff and you're fine.
When you said that, putting testicles where his eyes were supposed to be. I was trying to think. There was something, but it was like where he's like.
Sorry that got you going.
He's fired up.
Or he's something. There was like. I can't think of what it is now, but he's talking about like, you know, it was something, and then like knocking his eyes out, and then he's like. And that's the eyes or something, you know, like it's like a.
I just wonder if there's a fatality team with that whole like you know the development like team. It's like
a white erase board.
Yeah, right.
How are we gonna kill this
how
guy?
How is this
everybody?
Guy gonna die? Let's just punch him in the heart. No, John, that's fucking stupid.
Done.
Get out of here, John. Jeez. SL Up Late has their next show is May 9th, correct?
That is correct.
And I got one for May 23rd, June 13th. Mm-hmm. And people can buy tickets to go.
Yeah, STLUpLate.com.
That's awesome. Do you know who guests?
Oh, I should know, shouldn't I?
I don't want to put you on the spot.
Oh my gosh. You should have prepped me for this. Who is our guest? I can't remember.
That's right. Check it out. You can go to STLUpLate.com. There's so many guests, it's harder to.
There are a lot of guests.
Official Facebook and Twitter accounts.
Yes, Facebook.
You can engage with the show.
Yeah, you can. If you live in a town and we make fun of your town, you can come on there and bitch at us about us making fun of your town. That's very popular.
That's awesome. Isn't it funny if you give people the ability to like just be pissed off? Yeah.
Totally.
The most reaction. Maybe we just need to have a moment where we just say something really mean and horrible at the end of like each show. And be like, if this pissed you off, let us know. It'll be the most social interaction we have on the whole show. Hey. Be nice. Well, Eric, appreciate you hanging out with us. And I look forward to hearing more with STL Plate, like kind of network, because that's really interesting.
Yeah,
definitely
keep your ear to the ground. We should have a big announcement here pretty soon, the next few weeks.
Awesome. I'll have to get out to a show, too. Shane will have to take it.
Yeah, shame on you guys.
No. Have you been to one?
No.
Oh, see, it's Shane's fault.
Out of Wentzville.
If Shane doesn't leave, doesn't go to something, I don't, because I don't leave the house, really. Once I get off work, I just sit home and... I'll be a dad, that's what it is.
Yeah, I'm a dad, too. You can get a sitter once in a while.
I try and do that with my wife. I'm like, hey, can you...
Double up on a sitter.
I don't know, I'd have to bring my wife out. I bet she'd enjoy it, too.
Yeah. You can just bring your kids over to my place and...
Cotton candy and Mountain Dew.
Cotton candy and watching elevators on YouTube. You'd be set. Sweet. All right, Eric Christian, STL Plate, episode 65. Do you have a Twitter you want to plug or anything?
I'm at ETC and STL if you want to follow my one tweet a week.
Hey, you don't flood the people with the tweets. It's cool. Sweet. All right, well, man, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, of course. Thank you guys.
Chatting, and we'll have you on again sometime soon. And, we'll talk about more Mortal Kombat fatalities.
Yeah.
Mortal Kombat!
Episode 65, Rock Paper Podcast. That is a wrap.
Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast. Rock Paper Podcast, y'all.